those who recited the 17 Nalanda Master's praise. And so today, the students recited this praise of Nalanda Masters. I would like to thank them. So when it was recited, I felt greatly inspired. And these great scholars, I told them, these students, that they're not just the teachers of Buddhism, but they are marvelous masters who use their intelligence, their intellect fully by using reasoning to see the reality. And therefore, when I give these Thangka paintings or paintings of these 17 Nalanda masters, I usually describe them as professors of Nalanda Monastic University. And so this is true, because their writings on the, in reliance on the, their writings, 100s of thousands of people have been able to benefit by opening their intelligence, intellect, eye of intelligence, and tamed their mind, and progress along the path to the omniscient state of Buddhahood. Therefore, there has been their writings have been greatly beneficial, and so they are inconceivable masters. So now, Buddha Bhagwan established the profound and vast teachings through reason and logic, through the path of logic. By these great masters, and their writings are still with us, extant, accessible to us, to use as our textbooks and to reflect on. And when the time is right, we have the opportunity to teach them to others, other people. And so these great masters, remembering their kindness, I am giving a discourse. Perhaps there are people who are leaving today, tonight, and the next days. And so for the sake of those who are leaving, I wish to as their share of the dharma, I wish to do the ceremony for bodhicitta today. And so the teaching of the Buddha have the same message as those of the other religious traditions, teaching love and compassion. In the world, Gautama Buddha is regarded as a teacher of nonviolence. So this is a recognition that he has. And so nonviolence is not a practice that is based on the teaching of the Buddha himself alone, but what we need to actually understand what is the benefit of practicing nonviolence and what is the disadvantage of practicing violence, and through reason, and then therefore the practice of nonviolence is taught by Master Nagarjuna. And also more extensively in Shantideva's Bodhisattva Charya Avatara. where he goes through the disadvantages of self-cherishing attitude and the advantage of practicing cherishing others over oneself, and so that he makes this self-cherishing attitude, extreme self-cherishing attitude, dumbfounded. And so here we are going to do the ceremony for Bodhicitta in the form of aspiration. So there are different rituals that we can use, although so whichever verse sorry we may use, but we need to have this broad mindedness, broad thought of bodhicitta, which thinks of benefiting all sentient beings, for the sake of which whom you wish to become enlightened, and therefore you should have a very clear idea of bodhicitta within your mind. And in this very sacred and holy place of Bodhgaya, Vajrasana, first, as the field of merit, accumulation of merit and wisdom, we'll have the visual. We should visualize Master, the founder teacher, Shakyamuni, who was the Lord of teachers, who considered the reason as very important, and therefore, as I said in the beginning of the teaching. On the first day, Buddha himself has said that his disciples should not follow him merely because they have his teaching, but by using reason and logic and experiment, and they should come to the conclusion of the truth of his teaching. And therefore, just visualize the Buddha Shakyamuni, have a very clear image or imagination of Buddha Shakyamuni in your mind. And then the Manjushri, Maitreya, and so forth, who are, in other words, the eight clues bodhisattva disciples in the form of deity, who are the upholders of the profound and the vast teachings. And then the masters like Nagarjuna and so forth, who belong to the profound view lineage, and Asanga and so forth, who belong to the extensive conduct lineage. And then Master Saraha and so forth. The masters who of Tantra, or Sacred Mantra Yana, who have upheld these teachings, the 84 Mahasiddhas, in other words. And then the seven successors to the Buddha, such as Mahakashyapa. And the masters of Tibetan traditions, Tibetan Buddhist traditions in Tibet, such as the Nyingma tradition, in which we have the Abbot Chandrakshita, Master Padmasambhava, and the King Tisong Detsen, and the 25 main disciples of Guru Padmasambhava, and those of the masters belonging to the Karma and Dharma and the visionary teachings. And then in the new translation school, from the new translation school, we have the Kagyu masters, beginning with Marpa the great translator, accomplished master Milarepa, and his disciple Gampopa, and so forth. And then the Sakya tradition, the masters of the Sakya tradition, such as the five patriarchs of Sakya tradition, who follow the lineage of Virvapa, and masters, I mean, of Sakya tradition who have upheld or who upheld the teachings of Lobshe and Tsokshe. And so within the Sakya tradition, there are the sub-schools of Sakya, Ngorpa, and Tsarpa, so masters of all these three strands of Sakya tradition. And then in the Kadam tradition, we have the masters like Adisha, and whose disciple was Drumdempa, the great king of Dharma, and the lineage holders of the threefold Kadam traditions. Kadam scholastic tradition, Kadam Lamrim tradition, and Kadam Pith instruction tradition, and then the new tradition of the Kadam, such as Master Tsongkhapa and his disciples, Dogden Jambe Gyatso, and so forth. So all the masters of the tradition of Master Tsongkhapa. And then in the Geluk, there are the different strands of lineage, such as the Se lineage, and then Ansa lineage. And then the central, scriptural teaching lineage, which has come down through Jetun Sherab Senge. So, in other words, the masters of all the masters of all the different traditions of Tibetan Buddhism, say Sakya Nyingma Kagyu Geluk, and visualize all of them, and then visualize or imagine that you are taking part in this, generating the both Marpa Lotawa and Milarepa and Gampopa and so forth, Sakya tradition, five patriarchs and so forth, and then Kadam, Adisha, Drum Tempa and so forth, and then those of the great masters. So within amongst those of the eight deities, the close disciples, you could also imagine the white and green Taras as well. So because I'm going to do the transmission of the mantras, and so we will go through the seven limb prayer or practice. So let us all say this together. May I dedicate all the merits that I have gained through prostration, making offerings, and making confession, rejoicing in the good deeds of self and oneself and others, requesting the Buddhas to turn the wheel of Dharma, and requesting the Buddhas not to pass away. I dedicate all these merits for attaining Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. So this is said three times. So with regard to the word Semkye, Chidodhpadya or Bodhicitta, Shanti Deva says, if you are not able to exchange one's own joy and happiness with the suffering of others, leave alone attaining Buddhahood, even in samsara, the cycle of existence, you will not achieve and have happiness. So even in this life, leave alone reaching Buddhahood. If you're not able to do that, exchange one's own happiness and joy and so forth with the suffering of others, you will not have attained Buddhahood. But even in this life, you will not have happiness. And so all our problems that we create, that we undergo, are rooted in our self-cherishing attitude. And so within the samsara, the non-meritorious actions lead us to the unfortunate realms of existence, and meritorious ones, of course, We could create merits or meritorious actions for samsara if we lack that of the wish to be free from the cycle of existence, this determination to be free. And so, with regard to self-cherishing attitude, I mean, all the problems, it is very clear to us in the world that it is all the problems are rooted in our self-cherishing attitude. And therefore, Master Shantideva's Bodhisattva Charya Avatara says, all happiness or pleasurable experiences of the world come from wishing others to be happy. All unpleasant or unhappiness in the world come from wanting oneself to be happy. What needs is there to say more? Look at the difference between the childish who are overcome with selfish attitude and the Buddha, who have treaded the path of cherishing others over oneself. So the Buddha and these great beings are the beings who are our inspiration to us. And so this is because they have practiced cherishing others over oneself and themselves. So there are people, of course, harming others. They have no good reason but their own selfish reasons that they become objects of and laughing stock for the rest of the people, and criticized by others. And therefore, if you are able to rely on and develop and rely on a very good warm heart, you will temporarily also you will have happiness, and you will have you'll consider others to be your friends, and you can also be transparent without concerning to lose your face in front of others, and people will also trust you, and you will be happy. So when I go, I usually tell people that wherever I go, when I meet people, I always think that I am one of the 7 billion people on the world, in the world, and I don't consider that I am the Dalai Lama. So even in dreams, I don't actually see myself as the Dalai Lama, but I really recall myself as a bhikshu, a monk. So we are all same. It has advantage of, by respecting and cherishing others. I mean, I have benefit. And so on a daily basis, this self cherishing others and altruism is very beneficial to yourself. So when you are free from all kinds of concerns and hopes and fears and so forth, when you are not selfish, you'll gain more friends. And so if we talk about the next lives, by helping others but not harming others, you will be able to attain higher rebirth, a good, excellent higher rebirth after life, and then gradually and eventually you will be able to reach Buddhahood, the state of omniscience. And so whether this is attained or not is relied upon, is dependent on whether you have bodhicitta or not. So however, without bodhicitta, there is no way you can even be closer to the enlightenment, however much great practices you may have done. And therefore, between bodhicitta and omniscient state of Buddhahood, there is an incontrovertible causality, link of causality. And so it helps this life, and bodhicitta helps in this life as well as life after this. Therefore, which intelligent person, Shantidevas, Bodhisattvacharya Avatara says, which intelligent person would despair to, feel discouraged to ride the horse of bodhicitta, which leads one from bliss to bliss and does away with all despair. And so, if you are able to tread along the path, from life after life in a blissful way, happy way, then which sensible person, in other words, is going to feel discouraged? And then when you are able to practice bodhicitta in this way, you will be able to make the determination, as Chandideva also says, as long as space endures, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too abide in order to dispel the miseries of the transmigratory beings. And so this is the practice that we must pursue. And this is the best means to achieve one's own final ultimate goal. If you wish to be selfishly clever and foolishly clever, then you can indulge in selfish attitude, self-cherishing attitude. And Shantideva says that the Buddhas, having pondered for eons, have found only this to be the beneficial principle. So when they really reflected on what is the most beneficial practice, for many eons, reflecting, they thought that bodhicitta is seen to be the factor which
So this one, maybe I will do with the wish to liberate the verses tomorrow during the initiation. But I think most of we will be able to recite the refuge-taking verses. Through this way, we will take the refuge. So I think this is more relevant. So we all recite the verses for taking refuge. So when I was in Ladakh one time, there were quite a lot of gathering. And I told them that most of you can recite the verses of taking refuge. And is there anyone who understands the meaning? Raise your hand. Then there was no one raising the hand at that time. So we will take the Bodhisattva vow through the refuge taking process. Sorry, the refuge verses. So the first two lines, to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, I go for refuge until enlightenment. So this speaks about the taking refuge in the triple gems. So when we speak about taking refuge, of course there are the refuge coming from three different traditions, three different vehicles. And here, when we refer to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, so it's actually referred to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha according or relevant to the Mahayana traditions. So when the second line says that I go for refuge until my enlightenment or until I attain Buddhahood, so this is coming from the Mahayana practice. And the most important is to see the qualities of the Buddha, the qualities of his compassion and quality of his omniscience or the realizations. So from the qualities, different magnificent qualities that are present in Buddha, his body, his physical, his speech and mind, here the mind qualities is more important. And I, until enlightenment, by the power of this verse, it sees that we, at there is a connotation that I am not enlightened, an ordinary person now. So until I attain that kind of state of realizations, so I will go for refuge. So there is a meaning behind this. So the resultant Buddhahood is more important here. So the purpose behind going for refuge is to attain the Buddhahood. And the object to whom you go for refuge is not the one which is present within you or the one that you will become, but the other, the objects of the three refuges that are present in front of us, in front of you. And the third line, that in order to happen that, I will, by the practice of my giving and so forth, so all these bodhisattva activities, the skillful mean activities and the wisdom activities, so due to the benefit and accumulation of all these, I will work hard to bring all the sentient beings to the state of liberation. So the third, fourth line, in order to benefit the sentient beings, I go for a refuge until enlightenment. So the third line, most of the time we use the term by the accumulations of giving and other merits. So therefore, it's better to say by the collections of the giving. So even though in the original text it may be the accumulations of giving and other merits, but here it is better to use the term collection in term of merit, because the term collection can even include the accumulations that is coming through the wisdom, realizing emptiness and so on. So the accumulation of the wisdom here is actually referring to the wisdom realizing selflessness. Then if someone says that, why we have to use the collection term, because there is nothing related to the self, then it is evident that within this verse, the term I occurs two times. So by the accumulations of giving and so forth, by my accumulation, so there is one. Then there is a third, fourth line, that I go for refuge. In Tibetan, the first line, I go for refuge. So the self or the I, this term comes two times here within the one verse. So when that term or I or my comes, we have to contemplate or reflect about the meaning of the selflessness, a nature of our self. So we will do the recitation of this verse three times. You have to repeat after me with the preceded by the uncommon refuge taking practices coming through the Mayan traditions. And in order to happen that, in order to attain such a kind of enlightenment state, whatever the merits I have through my body, speech and mind, so I will dedicate it for the attainment of the enlightenment for the benefit of the maximum number of sentient beings. So this is how we are going to visualize. So I think you can translate the summary. So most of the audience here, so those coming from the Himalayan regions are all Tibetan, so you will all understand that. So we won't do the Hindi translation here. So by repeating the verse three times, so you have to sit on your knees. So if you have problems with your legs, of course you are exempted. So otherwise, please sit on your right knees. So please kneel on your right knees. So So in front of you, all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas visualize as present in front of you. And how does these special realizations and the qualities are present in all these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas? It is all due to the presence of bodhicitta in within them. Since we go for refuge to all these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, so if that is really a real practice, which is exists within you, then you have to follow and how they have trained themselves in realizing these attainments. And as it is said that I will also follow in the footsteps of the Bodhisattvas. Please repeat after me. I go for refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha until I attain enlightenment by my giving and so forth. May I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit the sentient beings. I go for refuge to Triple Gem until I attain enlightenment by the collections of giving and so forth. May I attain Buddhahood. So having completed the second time, so the third time that in order to benefit all the sentient beings, may I become attain Buddhahood. So at that time, so from the deep of your heart, you have to generate a very strong intention and aspirations that I have taken this bodhicitta in front of from the presence of these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And having done that, I will from now on work hard that I won't go under the influence of self-cherishing thought, and I will always consider the others cherishing as more important. So from now on, I won't inflict any harm on other people. I will make a very strong resolution here that I will never engage in any harmful deeds that will bring harm to other sentient beings. So this is a promise and a pledge that you have to take to today. So please repeat the third time. Repeat for the third time. To the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, I go for refuge until enlightenment. By the collections of giving and so forth, may I become Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. The great bodhicitta, so may they arise in all who has not arisen, and may they flourish further. All the elements and also the unlimited spaces. And as long as the space remains, and as long as the sentient being remains, may I be able to stay for that time in order to liberate them from suffering. So please sit down. So this is completed, taking the Bodhisattva vow. So we have already visualized all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in front of us. From the initiations of Tantra, there is also rites and rituals to take an all-encompassing bodhicitta mind. So I would like to do that also today. So this is of some this is of great purpose. So we have meditated and taken the conventional bodhicitta. So if we are also able to contemplate on the ultimate bodhicitta, which is actually the understanding of the emptiness, I think that will be helpful. So usually I do some Dogu divination, whether I have to do both or not. And this morning I do the Dogu divination, and it comes out very well. So we have faith for Buddhas. So when we go for when we have faith to the Buddha, so what is the Buddha or Sugata? And as it is coming from the 22nd chapter of the Middle philosophy, the Buddha which is present in front of us, who is adorned with all these qualities, but when we subject them to critical analysis, then the Buddha is not different from his aggregates, and his aggregates are not different from the self Buddha. So the Buddha or Sugata is not something to be found within the aggregates, or it's not even different from that. So in this way, and they are also not dependent upon each other. So there is not a separate or independent Sugata, which is the agent that actually relies upon an independent aggregates or the body of Buddha. So if we subject them to critical analysis in this way, we won't be able to find or even locate the Buddha. So we consider the Buddha as very precious. So then that Buddha whom we consider very precious, so where does that Buddha actually reside? I think it's from the middle way philosophy. The Sugata cannot be also locate after subject to critical analysis. Similarly, even the sentient beings will not be able to do that. So I used to change the words of this verse. So now in the text it is referred to the Sugata, but if you take that context to your own self, where is the I? The I is not different from its aggregates, and aggregates also not different from I. So where is that independent I that is present within you? So taking yourself as the example, so you are one of the sentient being, and considering as a follower of Buddha, a Buddhist. So who is that Buddhist? Whether it is the body, it is the consciousness, or the speech. So none of the three doors, body, speech, and mind, are not you. Then is there any other agent that actually controls over your body, that my speech, my mind, my body? But then even in that case also, you won't be able to locate that. So therefore, so self is not the aggregates, and aggregate is also not the self. So self is also not which possess the aggregates. So similarly, since we cannot find the Buddha when subject to critical analysis, similarly, the mere person or the you yourself will not be able to find when you subject them to critical analysis by these reasonings. So we have contemplated and taken the conventional bodhicitta. So now for the basis, in order to take the ultimate bodhicitta, the all-encompassing bodhicitta, so you have to think about the emptiness in this way. So the person to whom we go for refuge cannot be found when subject to critical analysis, similar to you also. So for a short moment, so think about, meditate on the emptiness nature of the Buddha and yourself. So those who have studied the philosophical studies for many years, we use different reasonings, like the seven aspect reasonings and so on, in order to locate the self and in order to generate the wisdom of emptiness. And the self doesn't exist as appear to our mind, but it is all due to the ignorant presence within us, which makes us develop this true grasping. So the self or the person yourself is mere a designated phenomena, that they do not have any objective existence. So that non-affirming negative self, that there is not, is merely and designated phenomena. So meditate on this emptiness nature of yourself for 1 minute. So first, meditate on the Buddha as not having its own objective existence, as coming through the middle way philosophy verse, that the Buddha is not the aggregate and so on. Then second, is the person whom you go to the refuge, that I myself is not the aggregate and so on. So meditate for 1 moment. So when we contemplate in this way, to our mind, since we are searching for the reality, a little sense of presence from the objective side will appear to our mind. So this verse by the 7th Dalai Lama's very inference. So all the things that appear in our eyes are all by merely designated by our mind. So the first verse speaks about emptiness. So second is about the meditative, the absorption mind. So I myself, who is the third line, actually speaks about the emptiness and also as an illusory nature. So when we contemplate further on this very mind, then there is nothing that appeared to us only as empty nature. So while staying in the meditative absorption, for meditative absorption at that state, nothing conventional phenomena appear to your mind. But as you arise from that meditative absorptions and in the post-meditative absorptions, so all the conventional phenomena appear to us. So at that time, you appear. You meditate, appear these all phenomena as merely illusory, that though they do not have any reality, but they appear as magical appearances. So I speak about emptiness a lot, and I request you to meditate on the emptiness. And now, again, meditate on this. As the Maitreya says that the Buddhahood coming from the So the Buddha, who is present in front of you with all his Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, that his body is glorified, adorned with the different adornments and so on. But the most important is speech that we can see even today, and we can read and study them. So maybe the first line of the Maitreya Nath, that the body of the Buddha is illuminating. So before we say that the Buddha himself, when he subject to the seven expert reasonings, he cannot be found. And also similarly, you yourself cannot be found in this way. So in the form of emptiness, they all are of same taste, and there is no distinction between what is positive and negative. Then as the Buddha stated, from the third wheel of the turning, about the subjective nature of the mind, and if you combine all these teachings together, that the Buddha's physical body is glorious, illuminating. And in this way, we will be able to realize about the Buddha nature, the very seat, the potential presence within us to become, which will be enlightened. So when we speak about yourself as becoming Buddha, there is a potential seat, a presence within you, so that which can become enlightened later. So when we become a Buddha or attain enlightenment or the omniscient mind, so the very presence of the luminous mind within us at this moment, so that has attained its full capacity. So at this moment, there are a lot of obscurations blocking our mind from becoming omniscient mind, and these are called ignorance. And the quality nature, the nature of the mind is glorious and of qualities, and the obscurations are all advantageous and temporary. So this is so today we have meditated on emptiness. We have also analyzed where the Buddha resides, where the Buddha is, and also the you yourself. So with that, considering taking that as an auspicious, I myself always contemplate on the emptiness nature of that. Also, I do a lot of meditation on Deity Yoga and so on. But meditating on emptiness and Bodhicitta is the core, the essence of all my practices. This is really moving, and it will bring change to one's mind. So Buddha has also meditated, practiced the bodhicitta, and has defeated the self-cherishing thought, and also meditated on the wisdom realizing emptiness, and he has defeated the great the darkness of ignorance. So the reason why we are continuously suffered by all these elements and the problems is due to these self-cherishing thoughts. Even though in order to be happy, so we do a lot of prayers, the prayers of clearing our obstacles. So how many times you do this kind of prayers will not be of much benefit. And with this as a foundation, so one has to do the Deity Yoga practices and also the Guru Yoga practices and so on. So if this is be able to combine, then that will be a real teaching. So this is how we are going to meditate on the ultimate bodhicitta. As Nagarjuna supplicated that by this marriage may attain the two forms of Buddhahood, by the two merits of the two accumulations of merit and wisdom. So the distinction of the merits and the wisdom accumulations is that the merits of accumulation of merit brings one closer to the attainment of the form body and so on. So we all came to Bodh Gaya and listened to teaching, and we generate a thought that Buddha is precious and may I attain Buddhahood. So that is not mere enough. So we have to see how we can attain, from what kind of practice will bring us closer to the attainment of Buddha, by what a skillful means. So when we speak about those means, it is the two accumulations of merit and the wisdom. So we also a recitation of few mantras. As we have visualized the Lord Buddha in front of us, and from the heart, the rays of the Buddha's mantra come from his heart in the form of light, and you visualize it, it dissolves within you. Please repeat the mantra. Om Mune Mune Ma Mune Sova. Om Mune Mune Ma Mune Sova. Om Mune Mune Ma Mune Sova. And then at the right side there is Avalokiteshvara, who is the nature of the compassionate qualities of all the Buddhas. So there are others such as Maitreya Nath, but it is more important to meditate on the Avalokiteshvara, which is also the particular bodhisattva, particular deity of the Tibet. And the Tibetan people has a unique relation and a connection with Avalokiteshvara. And if we meditate on Avalokiteshvara, of course, there is a closer connection between us. So generally, Tibetans are considered compassionate people, so there is a little difference. So Avalokiteshvara is the deity of Tibet. So next is the six-syllable Mane mantra. So from at the right-hand side of from the eight disciples, from then Avalokiteshvara. So that syllable in the form of light dissolves within you. So when we speak about blessing, so the blessing here is that the very nature, the mind of the Buddha helps you to make the self-cherishing thought presence within you weaker from the day to day one, and defeat that strong intensity of self-cherishing within you. Please repeat. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. And the next, at the left-hand side of Buddha, is Manjushri, the deity of wisdom, which is the form of the realizations of all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas' wisdom. And all the tantras, all the classes of the tantras consider the Manjushri and of course Avalokiteshvara very important. So the most important here is the wisdom. The way to attain the state of Manjushri is not merely the recitation of that mantra, but using your intelligence capacity to investigate what is right and what is wrong. So this is the only, the best way to attain the state of Manjushri. So not merely relying upon the wisdom coming through your listening, but contemplations and your own reflections. So this is more important. So the best way to attain Manjushri is to use your intelligence capacity as much as possible. So please repeat the Arabhaza mantra. Om Arabhaza Nadi. Om Arabhaza Nadi. Om Arabhaza Nadi. And as I've said before, next is the green and the white Tara. And Tara is considered as the deity of activities, Buddha of activities. There is a very valid reason to prove that. Tara as a deity of the god of activities. So please repeat. So when we speak about the Tara as a Buddha of the activities, of course, it speaks about the lifespan, our long life, and also our wealth, and so on. So there is some connection between Tara and all this our accomplishments. So please repeat. Om Tare Tudare Ture Sova. Om Tare Tudare Ture Sova. Om Tare Tudare Ture Sova. It's three over. Three times repetition done. Are you sure? So till here. So these times, the main disciple are our Indian brothers and sisters here. The Indian disciples from the different schools. So this has been completed. So I will continue from what we have, where we left yesterday.
What is ignorance? So in the different philosophical traditions and cultural traditions of India, there are so here on page 101, the final paragraph. So in the Indian traditions, there is mention of whether the things and self have any static and independent existence or not. So here, what is ignorance? That which perceives these same six elements to be unitary, whole, permanent, constant, static. And so these are referring to the philosophical schools which assert some kind of an independent, unchanging self. And misapprehension, variations of are there such variations of misapprehension is called ignorance. And so amongst the different types of not knowing, unknowing, there is an unknowing which is totally opposite to true nature of things. And so that is the root of all our misfortunes and faults. So until we become enlightened, this remains and within our mind stem. Here, this ignorance is that which is the root of all other mental afflictions. So the presence of such ignorance brings desire, aversion, and delusion towards objects. And so perhaps this refers to the delusion here, refers to the previous one moment, giving rise to the next moment of ignorance. Such desire, aversion, and delusion towards objects are formations caused by ignorance. And so due to ignorance, we have this exaggerated outlook, as I explained yesterday in connection with the verse in Mula Madhyama. So this exaggerated outlook is seen as the root or the source of our mental afflictions, and that itself is rooted in this ignorance, the grasping at true existence. And so some scientists even say that our mental afflictions arise through exaggerated outlooks, that inappropriate mentation. And so, conditioned by ignorance, there is the formation. And so we talk about the formations in terms of the karmas, such as meritorious karma giving rise to higher rebirths, and unmeritorious ones giving rise to unfortunate realms and so forth. And so, with regard to the karma, when you, of course, the karma then is active in you, this volition. And then, after that active state of karma, then it goes into some imprint in the form of, it turns into an imprint. And with regard to the imprint, leaving an imprint, there are different explanations by Indian masters. Those masters or philosophical schools, which followers of the philosophical schools, which assert some kind of objective existence in things. So, in other words, some kind of a fixated existence, and then there is this objectification of things. And so when you reject that, then it becomes very profound teaching as to destroy all objectification. So, in the Chittamatras talk about that of the Alavijana, and also the within the Eightfold Consciousness. And so the alaya vijnana, the storehouse consciousness of the foundational consciousness, is that consciousness on which it is said the imprints of karma are left, and that is carried to the next lives. And those who do not assert alaya vijnana, the storehouse consciousness, then they still assert that the sixth consciousness as the basis for leaving the imprints. We have craving that arises in us, craving, not wanting to let go of the things that we are attached to. And so that which distinguishes between individual objects is consciousness. The consciousness and four appropriate aggregates are that emerge in conjunction with it, and name and form, the faculties based on name and form of the six sense sources. The conjunction of the three factors is contact. The experience of contact is sensation. Attachment to sensation is craving. The intensification of craving is appropriation. Action that comes from or is enhanced by appropriation is becoming. The emergence of aggregates from such causes birth. The maturation of aggregates after birth is aging. The perishing of the decrepit aggregates is death. So next paragraph, they are called ignorance because of huge darkness, formation in the sense of forming, consciousness in the sense of causing to know, name and form in the sense of mutual support, the six sense sources in the sense of entryways, contact in the sense of context, sensation in the sense of experience, craving in the sense of thirst, appropriation in the sense of appropriation, and so forth. And so in the Prasangika Madhyamaka, they say that there is the disintegration of karma, and that disintegratedness is said to be a compounded phenomena, whereas the other schools, such as Sotantikas and so forth, say that this disintegratedness of karma is a permanent phenomena. But this cannot be possible, because if the disintegration in the present sense is also that which is produced, then the disintegratedness as in the past tense is should also be a compounded phenomena. It must also be brought about by its cause and cannot be permanent. So birth in the sense of emergence, becoming in the sense of giving birth to repeated becoming, rebirth in the sense of emergence of aggregates, aging in the sense of maturation of aggregates, death in the sense of perishing, sorrow in the sense of grieving, lamentation in the sense of wailing, suffering, the sense of in the sense of bodily torment and so forth. And then formations that lead to meritorious states comes consciousness that leads to meritorious states. From formation that leads to unmeritorious states comes consciousness. 103 and so forth. So, with regard to this text, the Rice Seedlings Sutra, shows that of the teachings that of the compounded phenomena, that of dependent origination in the sense of the compounded phenomena, how we are led into samsara through the links of ignorance and so forth, and then relates to the afflicted existence arising through ignorance, and then exiting that of the afflicted existence and reaching that of the liberation by ending or ceasing ignorance. You cease that of the volition and so forth. So as I explained, the progression along the path in connection with the mantra of the Heart Sutra, Gate Gate Para Gate Para Samgate Bodhisattva, I mean, you could understand that we can actually reason out the progression, that there, it is possible to progress along the path and not just resorting to some scriptural citation. So, of course, leading sentient beings through practice of turning the mind away from samsara and so forth, of course, is good, but it's not as a comprehensive. And in the Sakya tradition, on the basis of the three visions, also there are these teachings leading beings to the state of omniscience and so forth, but they are not as comprehensive and powerful. And within the followers of the teaching of the Buddha, there are those of the sharp faculty and those of the dull faculty. And those of the dull faculty more or less fix themselves on follow on faith, whereas the sharp faculty ones follow reasoning. By checking the reality of the nature of things as it is found in the commentary Sphutartha or by Haribhadra, which is a commentary on the Abhisamaya Alankara. And so it mentions how the beings or the followers of sharp faculty follow the teaching on the basis of reason and not just faith. And so, of course, in the Abhisamaya Alankara itself, there are the 10, what are known as the 10 instructions for the a refinement of one's practice of bodhicitta. And so the first of these is said mentioned as that of the nature of our practice, which are the two truths. As I said before also, on the basis of the law of causality as dependent origination, in the sense of law of causality, we have the teaching of the Four Noble Truths, the first two Noble Truths. And then to lead ourselves to liberation, reaching there of this true cessation through the true path, and we need to understand that of the dependent origination in terms of how things are designated. And therefore, we need first to demonstrate the two truths. So, of course, with regard to dependent, interdependent nature of things, we could take it as an academic subject as well, and it really serves a great purpose and has great benefit as well, covering many different subjects. And then on the basis of the two truths, then we need to go through the Four Noble Truths. And on the within the Four Noble Truths, we have the true cessation and true path. When these are introduced well, you are introduced well to the Dharma jewel as well. And so through that, we can introduce who the Buddha is, not just saying that the Buddha was a historical great being as such, but through this kind of reasoning. And then not being attached shows though of the path of the pertaining to beings of small and medium capacity. We are going through the lines in Abhisamaya Alankara. And then comes those of the progression along the path of seeing and progression along the path of meditation. In other words, the bodhisattva grounds and path. And so this is how we need to guide students through the path, the teaching. So in the praise to the 17th Nalanda master, I have actually mentioned that on understanding the two truths. I have the understanding of the four truths and understand how we are led into samsara and led out of samsara. And so I usually tell this story, and one person came to meet the abbot of a monastery in Kham, the eastern part of Tibet, and on that day the abbot had was not present in the monastery, and one attendant was in the monastery, and the visitor asked where the abbot went, and the attendant in the monastery said, "Oh, the abbot has gone to scare the elderly people in the town." So I met one Indian whom I knew for a long time, and he told me that he went to a teaching in the Tibetan Library of Tibetan Works and Archives in Dharamsala, and the teaching was on bodhicitta, compassion, and so forth, and he found it very inspiring, and it was very beneficial. And then on the second day, the teaching was on the hell realms. The hot hells were too hot, the cold ones too cold, and he couldn't bear the teaching, and therefore he discontinued going to the teaching, he told me. So of course, for those with dull faculty, this may be how they could be let into the teaching, let through the teaching by talking about the hell realm and so forth, and also be giving blessings, initiation and so forth right away. But in terms of the general structure of the teaching of the Buddha, we need to actually follow the pattern of beings or the followers, disciples with sharp faculty. And therefore, Nyingun Tsongkhapa mentions this general structure of the teaching, and then this specialized teachings. And so I say that the specialized teachings are referred to that of the Tantra teachings, because the Buddha arose in the form of certain deities for those who have certain special karmic connection and maturation of their mind for that. Whereas the Four Noble Truths and the teachings of the Perfection of Wisdom were given more or less in a crowd to a general audience, and therefore it is important for us to understand that the teaching of the Buddha in general should be introduced through the general structure teaching, and then when people's minds become more receptive for the more specialized teachings, we can go into the specialized teachings. Otherwise, people might have wrong misconceptions and misunderstanding about the teaching of the Buddha if we're not able to lead them progressively. So the main students today are the Indian students and the Indian public. So we have finished with the teaching. It's been very fortunate for me to give this teaching, in India. In the revival of, in my effort to revive the ancient Indian wisdom tradition, and I had this opportunity to share the teaching with you, and I'm very glad. I would like to thank all the organizers for this opportunity. We prayed for the Dharma to flourish for long. For that, of course, the harmony amongst the upholders of the teachings of the Buddha must be there. So the upholders of the teaching of the Buddha must be harmonious. We need to be serious about this. So as I said, all the religious traditions must be harmonious. It's very important to have this. Of course, philosophical differences are different, according to the different mental dispositions of the different followers of traditions. I mean, we should respect this, the different dispositions. I mean, everyone cannot be Buddhist, and we cannot make everyone Buddhist as such. And so, if we could have all the different religious traditions as they are, it is good. Respecting each other and being harmonious and friendly with each other is very important. As I said earlier, before also, I mean, we should not have this discrimination saying we are Mahayanists or the followers of the Mahayana tradition or Hinayana, they are Hinayana and so forth. I mean, these are not necessary. So what this shows is that your narrow-mindedness, your you only see what is right before you and do not have a broad-mindedness. And so if we could be, if all the religious traditions could be harmonious, everyone benefits. If you think that my religion, my this and that, you will be at the losing end. And so the Buddha himself has said, harmony amongst the Sangha is happiness. And their practice of the teaching will be also beneficial. And so in the Himalayan region, sometimes there are people who kind of are discriminate each other on the basis of sectarianism. I mean, you need to be careful. In Tibet also, in the Kham and Amdo regions and so forth, people say that, oh, they are follower of this, we are follower of this tradition, that tradition, and have this kind of, they indulge in discrimination. I mean, this is really unfortunate. We are in a very critical, very sad situation. And on top of that, if we have this kind of discrimination, sectarianism, I mean, it shows only your narrow-mindedness, ignorance, and short-sightedness. And so you need to be more broad-minded, see things on a holistic, in a holistic manner, from a wider perspective. Otherwise, in this, if we can have harmony amongst the religious traditions, I mean, we could be auspicious. Otherwise, not. So there will be a second program.